Great, Marshall.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Sleater, Judge Gaitis, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. You are our second case on our calendar for oral argument this morning. This case is A21-0617, In re the Guardianship Conservatorship of Chad Wayne Thornburg. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. I ask that you introduce yourself and the party you represent for the record at the start of your argument. And then, counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes rebuttal if you choose to use that. We are ready to go if you are, counsel for appellant.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Tara Almanic, and I represent the appellant, Douglas County Social Services, in this case. The facts are not in dispute in this case. Does the court want me to review the facts or go right to argument?
I think you could go right to argument, and we'll ask you if we have some questions.
Thank you. The case before the court is a private guardianship and conservatorship case pursuant to Minnesota Statute Chapter 524, Article 5, where the district court appointed appellant, Douglas County Social Services, as public guardian and public conservator pursuant to Minnesota Chapter 252A. Appellant contends that the district court did not have personal jurisdiction to sua sponte order appellant, a non-party to the case, to act as guardian and conservator in this case. The district court was without personal jurisdiction to enter an order appointing appellant to act as guardian and conservator.
Ms. Almanac, can I ask you a question on that? I noticed that neither the letters, the letter before the hearing or the comments, I believe it was a colleague of yours who attended the hearing, nor the two letters after the hearing at any time addressed the issue of personal jurisdiction. Would that not mean, pursuant to the Shamrock case, that the judge never had an opportunity to rule on personal jurisdiction? And since your client never raised the issue of personal jurisdiction, that's been waived?
Your Honor, I do not believe that it has been waived. In the petition filed by the former guardians and conservators, in their petition, they never requested that the appellant act as substitute guardian or conservator. So when the appellant responded initially by letter, the only request was regarding who would pay for the services of a private agency to act in that capacity. That issue was not before the court. And so when the appellant attended the initial hearing, they had no prior notice that the court was going to sua sponte appoint them as substitute guardian and conservator. So, and the attorney for the appellant did not have time before that hearing to even consider that issue. So after speaking with the Douglas County Social Services, it was an unusual circumstance because the appellant really wasn't involved in this case at all, except by getting a letter from the former guardians and conservators regarding payment of the fees to the private agency to act as a substitute guardian and conservator. So we do not believe that we waived that issue because the formal procedures for personal jurisdiction were never followed. The appellant was never personally served with a petition, which is a normal course to initiate personal jurisdiction. And specifically in the private guardianship and conservatorship statute under 524, Article 5, Subdivision 111, it specifically requires for the court to obtain personal jurisdiction over a party to appoint them as a guardian and conservator pursuant to that statute, that the party actually has to accept appointment as guardian or conservator. And that is how the court gains personal jurisdiction in a case. And in this case, Douglas County Social Services objected as soon as it found out that it was going to be appointed as a guardian and conservator.
Can I follow up and maybe jump past that issue a little bit? And you raised the issue of the special needs supplemental trust. It appeared that that was a driving issue for the county and perhaps even for the judge, talked about it during the hearing. And the judge actually did make a conclusion in the order, in her order, that the special needs trust, I'm looking at conclusion of law number 5, the special needs trust established for the benefit of Chad Wayne Thornburg is not an available asset for determining payment for a guardian conservator. My question for you is perhaps a practical one. If we agree with your client that the matter should be reversed, is the issue of the special needs trust now resolved because of that conclusion by the court, such that the issue of whatever funding source would have been available for the private professional guardian, in this case Presbyterian, will now be available, and they could be named and the contract that the judge, we're not asked to address, but the judge refused to order it, but it sounds like your client has regularly in the past entered into such contracts that can now be entered because of that court's ruling?
The appellant did not address that issue before the court and have the court address that issue, because the appellant believes that it does not have standing to address the trust document, because the appellant is not a party to the guardianship and conservatorship case before the court. And the whole issue as to how the subsequent guardian and conservator is going to be compensated, a private agent is going to be compensated, is outside the purview of standing for the appellant.
Just to follow up then, and again, I'm thinking of what will happen next in this matter, which I'm assuming nothing's changed. The guardians wish to be relieved and they want a successor named, and their request is the Presbyterian, the professional guardian the court and the county is familiar with. So my question is then, how would the issue of the supplemental needs trust be properly, would they in the private guardianship name the county as a party specifically to address the issue of that and its impact on any benefits that would be otherwise available to the successor guardian?
Because I actually did research on that issue, but because of standing, we did not address that issue. Assuming arguendo, in a subsequent district court hearing, we were made a party and that we could actually have standing to address that issue. I believe pursuant to statutes it's the administrative agency rules pursuant to statute during the time period that the special needs trust was created, that it specifically allows for that trust funds to be used for payment of guardianship and conservatorship fees. So I do think that based on my review of the statute that was in effect when the trust was created, I believe in 2005, and the administrative rulings with the Department of Human Services, that would be an available asset to pay those fees. But again, I specifically reviewed that issue and did not raise that issue because of standing issues before this court.
Counsel, can you explain to me, and I appreciate the argument about waiver, and I mean, I think a question about waiver with respect to personal jurisdiction is whether one has one can continue to raise a personal jurisdiction defense through later in case, as long as the party hasn't availed themselves sort of in the jurisdiction of the court to ask for something. So my question is, what was the role that the county was playing in being present at all in this matter? What were they doing there?
Well, the only notice the county received that there was this case and there was the issue was by the former Mr. Klecker, the attorney of the former guardians and conservators. The county received a letter that there was going to be a request that the appellant pay the private guardianship and conservatorship fees of Presbyterian Family Foundation. So that was the only issue that the appellant had before it, and the only notice that was the issue that was going to be raised. And appellant did file a letter asking that the court explore that issue further. But at no time prior to actually attending the hearing did appellant believe that it was a party to the case or it had any involvement in the case other than receiving a letter from the former guardians and conservators that they wanted them to pay the fees. The court on its own then went further and said while it could not require that appellant pay those fees, the court on its own just appointed.
I just want to jump in here because, if you look at the transcript of that hearing, there was discussion during the hearing about amending the petition, and the county attorney present was asked about the county's position. And so things started really going south from the county's perspective, probably when it looked like maybe the county was going to be appointed. And yet still, the county attorney present didn't object to the court's suggestion that the petition be amended. And I'm just not sure what we're supposed to make of that.
Well, I can be frank. I'm an assistant county attorney, and I was scheduled for a very serious sentencing hearing at the same time that this hearing was scheduled. So I was not available to make this hearing. And so I had a younger assistant county attorney attend the hearing, and she was not anticipating that was going to happen from the court. So as soon as the hearing was completed, she did inform me as to what happened. And I did consult with Douglas County Social Services, and I did file a letter immediately thereafter objecting to make a record for purposes of appeal that Douglas County Social Services was not agreeable to being appointed as subsequent guardian and conservator. So that's why it happened the way it happened. So addressing the first issue in this case, appellant was never a party to the case, was never served with a petition for public guardianship and conservatorship in this case, and had never accepted appointment as guardian and conservator, but rather objected on the record to the appointment. Therefore, the district court did not have personal jurisdiction over appellant to order that appellant act as guardian and conservator, either publicly or privately, and that the appellant is asking that the order be reversed and vacated regarding the portion that requires appellant to act as guardian and conservator in this case. Assuming arguendo that the court did have personal jurisdiction over appellant, the district court did not have legal authority to appoint appellant as public guardian and conservator in a private guardian and conservator case. Pursuant to Chapter 252A, that statute, that chapter specifically requires that the Commissioner of Human Services and not Douglas County Social Services act as public guardian. And the conservatorship portion has pretty much been eliminated by statute. But the commissioner can only be appointed after a thorough exploration is made regarding whether any private individual or private agency is available to act as a private guardian and conservator. And that was not done.
Ms. Olmana, can I ask another somewhat practical question that I'm trying to understand the distinction between whether the county is named as guardian versus a private guardian for which benefits funnel through the social service agency. I understand legally what the difference is, but financially, is the bottom line here is if at some point a ruling is made to the county's satisfaction that the supplemental needs trust is not available, then the county would contract with Presbyterian as they've done so in the past, apparently, such that funding would be available for a private professional guardian.
That has been done in the past, and that has been contrary to law. So no, the appellant will not be acting as a private guardian or conservator because...
No, that's why I asked the way I did, and I'm sorry I didn't ask it very well. The request was for naming Presbyterian as a private guardian, but contracting with the county for benefits to the guardian for those services. And right now the county's objection, as I understand it, is, well, you have a supplemental needs trust. So it's just like a medical assistance issue where you've got assets available and until you spend those down. My question is, let's assume a court does properly consider that issue at some point, determine it's not available such that benefits are available. Would that then lead to a contract with the county social services agency for funding to provide benefits for the guardians to so serve?
There is no legal authority, to my knowledge, that allows Douglas County Social Services to spend funds. There's no administrative ruling or statute that authorizes them to pay the fees of a private agency to act as a guardian or conservator. They can only distribute funds as allowed by state statute, which then turns into administrative rules that they must follow. So I am not aware, based on my research, of any authority allowing them to act in that manner.
This concept of a contract that petitioners were asking, there's nothing to contract for because there's no money available to do what they would have requested the Presbyterian to do, even though in the past there apparently was.
Yes, I think the district court made that ruling, and the appellant agrees with the district court's ruling that there isn't any authority allowing appellant to act or to pay those funds.
So the only option at this point, it seems, if we agree with your client to reverse, is for the petitioners to properly commence a public guardianship, asking the county and properly serving the county, asking the commissioner to be appointed via Douglas County Human Services.
My understanding of the law is that the appellant can act in an emergency guardianship capacity, or they can act in a public capacity after the Commissioner of Human Services appoints them. But there is no legal authority for Douglas County Social Services to act as a private guardian and conservator. There is no statute authorizing them to specifically act in that capacity.
I understood that. I just wanted to... I'm thinking of the future here, but they could serve as a public, obviously, under 252A. That's your point today.
As long as the proper procedures are followed, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and counsel for respondent.
Thank you. My name is Tom Klecker. I'm here appearing on the respondent's behalf today. The three prior guardians and conservators for Chad Thornburg, Beverly Cullen, Bernie Cullen, and Heather Sorensen. The guardianship and conservatorship was established in 2005. And for the reasons stated in the petition, the petitioner sought and received court approval to resign as guardians and conservators for Chad Thornburg. As indicated, they also sought out successor guardians and conservators, and those can be difficult to find. There, before the hearing, the county objected in an April 21 letter, and I would also note for the record that they were served with the petition in March by affidavit of service. Douglas County Social Services was served. But they objected in a letter of April 21, and then they proceeded to participate in the hearing and not make an objection, and then continued to submit filings to the court following the hearing. So to the extent the appellant argues that the court lacks jurisdiction, I would first note that our position is that was waived by participation and a failure to object. I would also argue that you can't have both, seek both the benefit of personal jurisdiction and then when things turn out not as you wish, then claim that there's no personal jurisdiction to support the court's decision. In this case, the county was affirmatively asking for relief that was not requested in the petition, namely that the court determined that the special needs trust funds were available for payment of guardian and conservator expenses. So not only did the appellant appear and participate in the proceeding and have notice, but they actually sought relief that was not requested in the petition. So based on that and the involvement of the appellant in the proceeding, our argument would be that any claims as to personal jurisdiction lacking are unpersuasive. As to the second issue, there was, as the court notes, no objection at the hearing concerning the appointment of Douglas County Social Services. There was a correspondence afterward, but there was no formal motion to reconsider. And the first letter of April 27, following the hearing on April 26th, concerned, again, the special needs trust. So they were renewing the appellant was renewing the request that the court make it determine that the special needs trust funds were available. I also think it's important.
Mr. Klecker, can I ask you on that issue, was the special needs trust even made available to either the court or the county prior to or at that hearing?
I can't recall, Your Honor, if the actual trust was made available, but we did provide information at the request of the appellant concerning the balance in the special needs trust.
So, but my question is, how possibly could a district court have properly considered an issue of a trust that's not even before it and hear an argument from the county as to how it might affect eligibility for services? What I'm trying to understand is that there was in a conclusion of law of the court and no one's really raised the issue before us. And so I'm assuming there's really nothing for us to address regarding the supplemental need trust with that today, at least, but the parties will have to. That's part of why I was asking some of the questions of Ms. Olmanic, that at some point, it sounds like that's the big issue for your clients and the county and the court, which has yet to be addressed. Would that be a fair summary?
I think so, Your Honor. I don't know the exact reasons other than what's stated in the findings of fact concerning the availability of the special needs trust. I know the district court judge in this instance would have some experience with that. I think the primary issue before the court at the April 26th hearing was the need for a guardian and conservator. And I believe the availability of these funds in the special needs trust for payment of guardian and conservatorship services is a separate issue and one that could be taken up by the county following appointment if they in fact believe those are available assets, which of course our position is they're not. But
and I understand that from your brief at least, your clients do not disagree that the public guardianship statute, I believe 252A is the right number if I've got it correct, applies to the ward in this case. And if that being the case, and since the subject matter jurisdiction provision in I think it's 524 or 5106 of the private guardianship specifically excludes that chapter from being involved, that would then lead us back to the sole chapter being the public guardianship. And that was not followed in multiple ways in this case. Would it not just be simply proper for this court, given that would be an abuse of discretion under that analysis, and we simply reverse and your clients will have to start over?
Your Honor, I guess our position is would be more accurately described as 252A and the public guardianship would not be the exclusive means of appointing a county agency as a guardian. Chapter 524.5 recognizes that a public agency can be a person who serves as a guardian and conservator. I think there's some practical considerations that illustrate why that's true. The timeline for having a public guardian appointed, and this is identified as in Chapter 252A as well as the appellant's brief, is significantly long. There's a notice provision to a commissioner. then the commissioner either accepts or rejects the nomination, and then there is a evaluation period, and a petition needs to be filed, and then a hearing is set. The court, in our view, has significant discretion when it comes to guardian and conservatorship matters, given the need to protect the people under guardianship and conservatorship, and is faced with a decision where people have resigned as guardians and conservators, and there's been a person under guardianship and conservatorship for 15 years who has ongoing needs, both as it relates to healthcare, personal needs, financial matters. So the practicality of it is that someone needs to serve in that capacity. And a vacancy in a guardianship or conservatorship poses significant risks to the protected person. The county is not without recourse. The county can, following its substitute appointment or however it wants to view its appointment by the district court, is one of the parties that can petition for a public guardianship and conservatorship. But again, our view would be that that's not necessarily the exclusive manner in which the public agency can be appointed for.
Mr. Kleckert, maybe to get to the issue of the county, the main concern here is that was not even a request, though, of the petitioner. And so I understand, in other words, the court really never had a claim or a request that under private guardianship, a county can be named under all the legal arguments you're making here today. And literally it came up during a 15-minute or whatever number of minutes oral argument Zoom hearing at which it evolved to the county being named. And so that seems so contrary to at least the case law, at least, or it's not consistent with any case law that have been cited by either party. And moreover, though, most the county wasn't given an opportunity in a formal way to be present. And of course, you didn't have a normal evidentiary hearing and et cetera. So I guess I'm just trying, and you heard what Ms. Almanic just said here moments ago, that she's not aware of any circumstance in which the county would in any event. So why not simply commence the public guardianship then, if that's what your clients wish to do, and go through that process? It might be a longer process, but then may have the result that your client desires.
And that would be an option in certain circumstances. My clients sought to resign as guardians and conservators, and they did so in large part because, as stated in the petition, they thought it was in the best interest of Chad Thornburg, the protected person. The county, when I reviewed the cases, and I was unable to find any cases specifically addressing this issue, but the overriding theme seems to be that the district court has significant discretion in these types of matters, given the need to have the protected person taken care of in medical matters, financial matters, and have their personal needs met. And the process described under 252A involves a significantly long process, and until the resolution of that process and the appointment of a public guardian and conservator, our position would be that Mr. Thornburg's needs can't be met because there is no acting guardian and conservator. And I think the district court recognized that in the findings, that the guardianship and conservatorship will not fail for want of a guardian and conservator. I think the district court was required to accept the resignations. I'm not aware of any authority that allows the court to delay that request. So I believe the district court recognized the situation for what it was, and that this was an individual with ongoing needs that needed to be serviced by a guardian and conservator.
But isn't this precisely the reason that 252A was the only appropriate vehicle? Because before the public, a public organization is entrusted with a guardianship, there actually does have to be a process to ensure that there are no other private entities or individuals who can assume the guardianship. I mean, isn't that precisely the problem? Is here that wasn't explored at all. Whereas, you know, under the private act, that's not a requirement.
Your Honor, I think in this situation, I recognize the need for 252A. I I would first point out that the court recognized that there was an immediate need for a guardian and conservator. And also that the second point would be that Douglas County Social Services is in a position to petition itself for the appointment of itself as a public guardian and conservator. So there are going to be situations in which, and there will be more extreme situations, but this would be a situation in which there is going to be a gap between, you have an acting guardian and conservator, they resign. It could be a case where they die or they're incapacitated, and someone needs to serve in that role to adequately safeguard the protected person. That doesn't mean the county is without relief. The county under 252A can then petition for the public guardianship and conservatorship, but that process under the statute is prolonged. And in the meantime, the protected person would have no one acting on his or her behalf and looking after his or her well-being.
But doesn't that assume that the county wants to be the guardian if they petition for it, the public guardian? I mean, what about, I'm just wondering, what if there's a situation where someone becomes a protected person, there was no previous guardian or conservator? Your argument is that under the private appointment, the county can be obligated to assume that role on a temporary basis, and then is that it? Even, and you don't have to follow the Public Guardian Act?
Well, Your Honor, my point would be that 252A would not be the exclusive means of appointing a public agency as a guardian and conservator, in that the practical realities of a guardianship and conservator would support that, as well as the thorough process involved with the appointment of a 252A guardian and conservator cannot be accomplished in short order. So the county would be in a position either to find a professional guardian and conservator, a private party, or seek its own appointment as a guardian and conservator under 252A.
You can go ahead if you have more argument.
I would just a few more comments to the court. I think this is a case in which the county participated and asked for affirmative relief, not even requested by the petitioners in the petition. So any claims as to a lack of personal jurisdiction have been waived both by the appellant's participation and its specific request for relief.
And just so I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just so I understand, because I do want to hear from opposing counsel on rebuttal, what is the specific relief that was requested by the county that you say represented a waiver?
Our petition, Your Honor, requested that the guardians and conservators be petitioned to resign and that Douglas County Social Services be directed to enter into its standard contract with Presbyterian Family Foundation. The county's request for relief was that the court determined that the funds held in the special needs trust were available to pay for the services provided by Presbyterian Family Foundation.
Okay, thank you.
And then as to the appellant serving as a guardian or conservator, I would just reiterate what I've stated briefly. I don't believe 252 is the exclusive means of the county serving in that capacity. Acting guardian and conservator has a right to resign, and a protected person needs to be protected, and that is why the district court has granted significant discretion in those matters, because otherwise someone under guardianship and conservatorship is left to their own means, which is contrary to the whole purpose of establishing a guardianship and conservatorship. The county has various options. It can try to attempt to locate a third party. It can seek a public guardianship if it believes that is necessary. If it believes that the funds held in the special needs trust should be used to either reimburse the county or a third party for guardianship and conservatorship services, it can seek that relief.
You might be wrapping up. We did went a little long on the other arguments, so you're welcome to spend a moment here to wrap up.
No, I won't. I think I've adequately stated our position. I would just ask the court to affirm the district court's decision, and thank you.
Thank you very much. And rebuttal, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. The appellant did try to file a motion with the district court to address all of the issues that are before the court now for appeal, and that request was denied. And in the order, it specifically said that the motion to reconsider was denied. So that's why this appeal is before the court. My understanding under the private guardianship and conservatorship statute is that any guardian or conservator who is appointed by the court must accept appointment in writing pursuant to subdivision 111. And there's actually a form that the proposed guardian or conservator signs, which according to that statute then conveys personal jurisdiction by the court over that proposed guardian and conservator. And that did not happen in this case. The court just on its own decided to appoint Douglas County Social Services to act in that capacity. And the appellant in this case asserts that the court did not have the legal authority, the personal jurisdiction to order appellant to act in that manner. And then regarding the second issue, the procedures under Chapter 252A are very specific, and a specific petition is required, and reaching out to the Commissioner of Human Services is required prior to a petition being filed, because it's the Commissioner of Human Services who actually acts as the public guardian and then in turn can delegate its authority to a local social services agency like the appellant in this case to act in that capacity as a public guardian. Based on my review of the statute, I don't believe that a public conservatorship is even available anymore. I think that goes more to the private conservatorship is the only vehicle available now. And there's been recently some additional changes to pretty much eliminate all the terminology in the public conservatorship proceeding. It's basically a public guardianship proceeding. The appellant doesn't have any additional argument and would just ask that the court consider its oral argument and the specific argument in a brief submitted to the court. Thank you.
So if I can just ask one question, just maybe this is evident already. So when a county wrote the letter on April 21 asking that the supplemental needs trust be considered as a resource for payment. Although it's asking for something there, your argument is that didn't waive personal jurisdiction over the issue of appointment because that had not been petitioned for. Is that right? I mean, it's not that the county was asking for nothing. You're just saying it doesn't relate to the matter for which, you know, the appointment, which is a personal jurisdiction argument you have. Is that right?
The district court often reaches out to Douglas County Social Services to assist in cases and to give input in cases. And that was the capacity that the appellant thought it was acting and basically trying to be assisting the court and saying, well, there's this trust available. Can we consider that as a possible means to fund a subsequent guardian and conservator at the private agency? It was not in the range of what we thought could possibly happen that appellant would in fact be appointed as the private guardian and conservator, which I know it was designated as a public guardian and conservator, but this is a private guardian and conservator case. So the appellant did not think that it was submitting to the jurisdiction of the court by basically just raising that question and raising that issue, because it did receive a copy of the letter and a copy of the petition that was specifically asking for appellant to pay for the private agency fees of Presbyterian Family Foundation. So that really wasn't in the purview of where in fact party to the case versus they're reaching out to us, which it's not unusual for social services to assist, but not actually act as a party. And even if the court was going to say, appellant, are you going to act as a guardian and conservator in this case? I'm just not aware of any situation where it's forced upon the proposed guardian and conservator. The statute specifically says that the proposed guardian or conservator must accept appointment, and that is when the personal jurisdiction is granted to the court, and that was not done in this case.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you both for your arguments. The case is submitted. And we'll